Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
This is KKFN, KKFN HD1 Longmont, Denver. Wow. Chad, not bad, huh, Zach?
Got pretty good. In there. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Good job, James.
So, Chad,
Zach's partner beat already.
That's right. That's right. 1-0. The Jets are terrible. I mean, I think there is no better evidence of that than as big of a dumpster fire as the Broncos look like right now. They're a 3-point favorite on the road against the Jets.
Wow.
So that being the case, and I know it's not a must win in terms of standings and, you know, playoffs and all that kind of stuff, but just in terms of, man, trying to kind of keep everybody on board, give there some hope in that building, just to create some sort of positive vibe with what will be kind of a mini bye week after that when you play on a Thursday night. How important is getting a win on Thursday against arguably the worst team in the league? It's got to be almost a must win, right?
I think if you put the must win on it and things don't turn out your way, I mean, you have a potential, if you're Vic Fangio and you're maybe not saying the words must win, but that's the sentiment that you're trying to express, and things don't go well, you're starting Brett Rippon, so clearly things haven't been going well. There's a chance for things to go even worse here because of who's under center and his lack of experience. You could lose that whole team 4 games into the season. And that whole scenario I just laid out with Zach where young guys are improving and you've created a positive environment somehow despite the losing record and the team can sense internally that they are improving, you give yourself no shot at all with that if you communicate that message and you don't come out with the win on Thursday night.
Chad, do you think they will?
I think they will. I think they will. But this is professional football. And, you know, there's teams that lay an egg all the time. And whether they're good teams or bad teams, teams lay eggs all the time. And teams sometimes play past themselves. I mean, there's some talent on the Jets. Sam Darnold was a talented quarterback. Frank Gore is probably going to be in the Hall of Fame. Chris Hogan, you know, has a chance to, you know, was one of the integral parts of the New England Patriots passing attack. So there is some talent there. So the Broncos certainly can't go into this game cocky, which it would be hard to imagine considering the first 3 games of the season.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. Chad, appreciate you, man. We'll do it again soon.
All right, thanks, guys. Always appreciate it.
No doubt. There he goes, Chad Brown. Shooting it straight, per usual. Look, James, if these Broncos lose to the Jets are as banged up as them. And if Frank Gore and LaMichael Perine, along with Braxton Berrios and Kalen Ballage, find a way to score more points on the remaining Broncos defense that are healthy, this Thursday night will be the writing on the wall. Because it'll be amazing what a win will do for the Broncos. I know against the opponent, it is what it is. The Jets are a dumpster fire, both organizationally at the head coach spot and the roster. So if you win a game, you can kind of just take a breath for, you know, almost a week and a half, and hopefully you get Drew Locke back for the Patriots game. And maybe the tone changes a little bit, and we can sort of use our imaginations on some different scenarios. But if you lose to this team, and I don't care where they're playing, you said it, Vegas doesn't have a dog in the fight. They have the Broncos as a 3-point favorite on the road, which means if they played at a neutral site, you'd be near a touchdown favorite, approximately. This would be a cherry on top in terms of bad looks.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a litmus test, right? And it's funny, the Jets seem to kind of always be this for the Broncos, because if memory serves, in VJ's final year, they were 6-6 at one point.
Yes.
Those 6 losses, 5 of those teams went on to win their division. So, you know, they lost to the Chiefs twice. I forget who the other ones were, but they went on to be, I think the Rams were in there. It was not, you know, the terrible teams that they lost to, but there was one that stuck out. It was the loss to the Jets. And they go up there and they're just not ready to play and they get blown out and get embarrassed.
Yep.
That became kind of the thing everybody, you know, hung their hat on of, hey, VJ doesn't know what he's doing. Now they had the injuries to Chris Harris Jr., to Emmanuel Sanders, and it unraveled after that and they finished 6-10. But where they were sitting at 6-6, like, all right, there was a sign of progress. I think what Chad talked about is a lot of this. I don't know that it's about the number necessarily in terms of wins and losses. It's sort of, you know, does it pass the eyeball test? Is it getting better? Are they heading in the right direction? Is there sort of a spirit of camaraderie amongst the players where they seem to be buying in, and this, you can see it starting to click a little bit?
Yeah.
We haven't seen any of that. And man, if you go up and lose to the Jets, I don't know how you ever kind of capture some of that the rest of this season with a trip to Foxborough to play the Patriots looming up next. It just turns into, boy, that how do you avoid the first 0-5 start in franchise history if you lose to the Jets and you got to go play at New England
boy.
The next week?
Oh, boy. Have they never been 0-5?
Never. Last year would have been
gosh.
It. They beat the Chargers in L.A.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right.
So, you know.
Oh, my gosh. They're making the wrong kind of history. First time in organizational history, they're 0-3 in back-to-back years, and they could be 0-5 for the first time in the history of the organization after some lean years at the end of the 60s and early 70s.
Yeah. No, and it's just, it's kind of one of those things of, boy, you need to see some things trending in the right direction, and everything at that point would be trending in the wrong direction. If you can go on the road, and look, the Jets are terrible. They are. But this isn't college football where it's total mismatches, right? This isn't Alabama playing, you know, some teacher's college from a directional state, right? Like, that's not what's going on here. If you can go on the road and win with Brett Rippon making his first career start, I don't care that it's the Jets. You're now 1-3, and there's some positivity to build on. But if you lose, I don't know. I don't know how you recover from that. I mean, I was on with Sandy in Orlando this morning, and look, I'm not rooting for anybody to lose their job, despite the fact that I've been on
campaign for it.
I don't think the Vic Fangio's
I don't
the right
root
guy.
For anyone to lose their job, although I've been campaigning and crusading for the last 2 weeks.
I've just made my statement of, like, I don't think he's the right guy. He's not the head coach that I can see ever leading this team to a Super Bowl. So I don't think he's the right guy. I think they need to change. I'd love to be wrong, right? I guess that's what I mean by I'm not rooting for it. I'd love for him to prove me wrong. That would be great. It's not personal. But if you lose to the Jets and you're 0-4 for the second straight year, and I know this would be making change primarily for change's sake, but I think at some point you have to show that this isn't acceptable. This isn't the culture we want to have here. I almost think Friday you have to make a change at head coach. If you lose to the Jets and you're 0-4 for the second straight year, first time in franchise history that's happened, I don't know. I don't know where things would be going in terms of a positive outlook for the rest of the season. I don't know a reason not to make a change at that point.
Yeah, well, you know, I and I've had this discussion with you a little bit. You and I agree on a lot of the factors leading up to the ledge, and you jump off when you say, you know, we're going to fire Vic in you know, game four. And I understand what brought you to that conclusion. But even if it's a mere, like, practicality, like, I don't think you move on from Vic Fangio after four games in his second season. Like, we can see the writing on the wall. We can say that it's probably going to come to an end soon. But I don't think, given the circumstances and the rather short tenure, we're at the start of year two, and given how much John Elway has changed things in here, if John Elway did that, what he'd be doing is really cutting off his nose to spite his own face. It would draw attention to his shortcomings if he did it this early in the season. And I really believe that.
I get it. But you know what? And I always use the relationship analogy. Like, yeah, if you keep breaking up with people, to some extent, that points out your shortcomings of you don't pick very good people, right? Like,
sure.
But you don't just stay in a bad relationship when you know it. When you know this is going nowhere, there's no future here, but I don't want to look bad in front of friends and family or, you know, on Facebook that I had to change my status again.
Right.
So I'm just going to stick with it. Like, that would be foolish. So, you know, and to me, I just don't think that's a good enough reason to make a change. The only reason not to make a change, Zach, is if you truly believe Vic Fangio is the head coach of the future. We always say that about quarterbacks, but he's the guy for 2021, 22, and maybe even beyond. Like, he's the guy that's going to guide this franchise kind of out of the desert here. I don't see it. I don't see anything that has shown us that, yep, that he's the right guy. I mean, who's A.J. Johnson's gotten better under him? Maybe Mike Purcell, but like Mike Purcell's not like he's turned into a Pro Bowl type player. But I mean, I think Justin Simmons is regressing. I think Bradley Chubb last year, even before he got hurt, was regressing. Von Miller, I mean, the list goes on and on. Like, I think guys are getting worse, not better, under his tutelage. So throw the record out. Let's just act like they don't keep standings, and we're just looking at, hey, how does the team perform, and are players getting better? I don't have a lot of evidence to suggest that Vic Fangio's coaching anybody up. Not at all.
Well, you know, man, this is a tough one. I typically will say don't let the schedule or the calendar be a source of optimism for you. You know, I get heat from Rockies fans. I said middle of the year, like, this isn't a good baseball team. This is not a good baseball team. It's, oh, no, we have X amount of games left. Don't let that be your source of optimism, the calendar. Right. But I will reference the calendar here because we've only seen three football games. We've only seen three. Now, it's been a bad product, largely. It really has, outside of stretches in week one and week two, but just not good enough, right? You lost those games. Then total ineptitude this past week. I just think it's a little bit too early, and I may ultimately end up on your side of this. I really may, that I am not seeing good signs from Vic Fangio, for sure. And I think that this upcoming stretch of football is really going to be telling for Vic, because Vic's not a rah-rah guy. He is a scheme-it-up guy, and the chips are down right now. And I think this is it's a little bit unfair to do sweeping judgment for Vic, given his side of the ball specifically. That's super banged up. 3/4 of all these injuries are on his side of the ball. But at the same time, I don't like what I see. But I still think it's just a little bit too early. It's week three. Let's see if they can win a football game on Thursday and go from there. And you referenced the last portion, or really the 2018 season with Vance. That was his final year here, the second year. And there was a point, like, the Broncos were 3-6, and then they had a bye week, if you remember. And this is with Case Keenum as the quarterback. They come out of the bye week, and they beat the Chargers. And now they're 4-6. Okay, big deal. Then they went and beat the Steelers. And that was the game where I believe Shelby Harris intercepted Big Ben in the end zone, and that caused the beef between A.B. and Big Ben. But they won back-to-back games coming out of the bye. And then they went to Cincinnati, and they beat the Bengals up 24-10. And then you look, and they're 6-6, and you sort of reference this juncture. And at the time, and people were calling us crazy after the fact, but at the time it made sense. Because I said, look, if the Broncos win out, Vance could get coach of the year, because they were 5-11 the year before. If you double your win total, and you say, okay, well, that's a great assumption because there's only four games left. They were playing a 2-win Niners team on the road. You remember that?
Yeah.
With a chance to go over 500 with three games left beyond.
Which included the Browns. So, I mean, their schedule's set up really, really well those last four games.
You're on it. Good memory. It's their last four games after they got back to 6-6 was against a Niners team that was picking right at the top of the draft, a Browns team that was just horrific, a Raiders team that was below average, and a Chargers team that was decimated with injuries. And they lost all four of them, and Vance got canned. But what I brought that back up because it looked really, really dark there during that season. And it was on the heels of 5-11. But it was just a little bit too early because the team actually responded after the bye week. I want to see if the available players here, the Bradley Chubbs, the Shelbys, the Jarrell Casey's, the Justin Simmons and Kareem Jackson's, the A.J. Johnson's, the Bryce Callahan's, that's just on the defense. I'm hoping that that group can become inspired and change the talking points around here in Broncos country, because it's just so early to be talking like this. I hate it.
I get it. But look, I could watch Fast and the Furious 1 and realize none of those movies were going to win an Academy Award. I don't have to watch all 9, right? So you can make your judgment a little bit early on these things. I think Vic falls into that category. But the other part of it is, and here's why I didn't want to pass out orange slices in the first 2 weeks. I was fine with the fact that the players played hard and were in it, but it was coaching blunders that I thought cost them those games, right? It was the not using the timeouts, or at least cost them a shot to win the game. Not using the timeouts late against Tennessee, And then it's third and two at the 15-yard line. You're driving for the win. You got Melvin Gordon in the backfield, Jeff Driscoll at quarterback, and you go pass, pass. That's coaching. So that's because my criticisms were about Vic Fangio and his staff. They're not a bunch of greenhorns. They should know better. And I thought those two games, they squandered what turned out to be a really good effort from their guys because they made poor coaching decisions. Last week, they didn't even get a good effort. And then there was no opportunity to even make bad coaching decisions because it was such a blowout. That's the part of it of like, well, I've seen it. I've seen that he continually makes poor decisions late in games when it is close, which is how he wants to play football. He wants to win 17-13. Well, those kind of games come down to a decision or two, a play or two. Not kicking a 60-yard field goal against the Raiders late in the game when you're up by 6 points or whatever it is. Like, just things that leave you scratching your head time after time after time. That's my issue with Vic Fangio, and that's why I believe we've seen enough to know he's not the right guy. He's not going to make the right decisions in those kind of situations because he hasn't improved. It hasn't gotten better with experience. It hasn't gotten better with time. And I think he gets more of a free pass than VJ did. Can you imagine if Vance Joseph had a press conference and called his quarterback by the wrong name?
Yeah,
we'd still be playing that drop.
Yeah. And honestly, we might be playing this one for a while. you can't get the new quarterback's name wrong you announce him.
There is no better example, or it's two of them, of how bad this quarterback situation has been in the last 5 years than the head coach doesn't know the name of the quarterback and the GM mispronounces the quarterback's name when he's introducing him when they sign him as a free agent, right? It's Case Keesum and Mark Rippon. That right there just tells you how bad this situation
is.
Gosh,
that's a good point. Case Keesum and Mark Rippon.
Good grief.
I will say I hated your Fast and the Furious analogy. Fast and the Furious
Why?
1 made over $200 million.
I didn't say they weren't going to make money. I said they weren't going to win an Academy Award.
That franchise, they made like $1 billion. But we can...
It was the only one I could think of that had like 9 movies.
Yeah. Okay. Vic Fangio, earlier today, injury updates for Philip Lindsay. Who's that? Devontae Harris and Drew Lock.
Harris, Devontae, Phillip, and Jerry were limited, and obviously Drew did not practice.
Okay, so that's kind of what we would expect to hear. This is Vic Fangio, cut two here, Steven, announcing Mark Rippon as the starter against the Jets.
Yeah, we're going to start Mark. I mean, Brett. I keep calling him Mark at times because of his uncle. But we're going to go with Brett, but we do have the ability to mix Jeff in there some in the game if we feel like we need to.
Somehow it only makes sense that both of them are going to play. Like, yeah. This is the way that it has to be for the Broncos right now. They're both, like, watch this, because it's going to be eerily similar to 2018, where three different quarterbacks were all the starter, backup, and dressed in a suit and game day inactive, separate times during the season, twice, all of them. If Jeff Driscoll starts week 3, gets pulled for Brett Rippon, Brett Rippon starts week 4 and gets pulled for Jeff Driscoll, it's going to be just a cherry on top, will it not?
Oh, yeah. It for those who like to root for chaos, that's the epitome of chaos, right? They can't figure out who to start. They can't figure out who should play the end of games. They can't figure out who should come out after halftime. It's just they're just throwing darts at that point. But yeah, I mean, Mark Rippon hasn't played in what, 25 years?
He
won a Super Bowl in 1992.
As a
28 years ago. That's his reference.
Did he win a Super Bowl with, James?
He was with the Redskins. They beat the Bills up in Minneapolis.
But didn't Doug Williams play in that game?
No, Doug Williams was the quarterback when they beat the Broncos.
That's right. 4 touchdowns in the first half, something like that.
Yeah, no, the only reason I really remember that game, Zach, is because I had Art Monk to score the first touchdown, and he actually did, and then they called it back due to a penalty, and win that.
They had props back then?
Well, it was, you know, it was in college. There's always somebody doing that.
Right. This is more from Vic Fangio. What did he see from Brett Rippon to give him the nod this week?
Just, you know, we've had a year and second training camp and a couple weeks of with Brett here. And, you know, think he deserves a chance here to see how he can do here as a starter with albeit a short week of preparation, and take a look at Brett that way.
Now, I know this thing is set up for a disaster. He's never started a game. It is a short week. But given on what we know, and we don't know much, I thought he played well. He came in and played well. I know Jeff Driscoll just did it the previous week where you don't have that pressure. You can come in and just, you know, let it fly. But I thought it came out of his hand quick. It was a live ball. He was 8-9 for 59 yards. Did have the pick. But, you know, what if Brett Rypien does come out and play well? Is there a possibility of that?
Sure. That would be great. And look, I think what he did last week, he's playing against a Tampa defense at that point is playing prevent. So I think we got to take the numbers with a grain of salt. But look, he was accurate. He hit guys. He seemed to know where he was going. He didn't have a deer in the headlights look. Like, I'll give him some credit. Vic Fangio also didn't answer the question. Like, what makes you think he's ready for this? Oh, it's his turn. He deserves the chance. Like, that's not an answer. An answer would be, hey, he makes quick reads. He makes good decisions with the football. He's accurate. Some of the things I just said, like, that would be an answer. He didn't say anything about that. He just said it's his turn, but, you know, we're kind of giving him a crappy turn because it's a short week. Like, that was his answer to the question, which...
Well, this is Vic expanding on it. He was asked, did Rypien's decision-making against the Bucs give him an edge this week?
Well, that's one of Brett's strengths. You know, he is a smart quarterback, does a good job recognizing things, so... Obviously, that's something that's always been in his favor.
All right. Haven't seen him play since college, but we'll see how it goes.
The Hall of Fame is not littered with quarterbacks whose number one attribute was he was smart. Right? Like, you got to have intelligence. I get it. But, you know, Terry Bradshaw's in Canton. There are a lot of guys that you got to have some other skills, and you know, being smart is one of them, but it always makes me nervous when smart is the number one attribute. That just reeks of Trevor Siemian to me.
Honestly, that's what I thought of when Vance, when he would compare, and longer listeners of The Fan will remember this well, when he would compare Paxton and Trevor, he would only talk about physical attributes with Paxton and only talk about intangible elements with Trevor. And it turns out you need both.
You do. You do. But I would put talent, I would put the physical attributes first.
Sure.
And then because I think you can coach around some of the other things. You can't coach around a guy that can't make throws, right? Like, if a guy is not necessarily the you know, the old proverbial sharpest tool in the shed, you can dumb things down and, you know, heck, be in his ear until 15 seconds before the snap or whatever it is and tell him where to go with the football. You can't coach a guy to throw a 20-yard out if he can't make that throw.
All right, there's a lot of bad news in Broncos country right now. I have good news. And in fact, I think it might be great news. And I'll tell you what it is next. There's been a lot of bad news in Broncos country here as of late, and it has been bad. I think I have some good news, and if it breaks right, it could be great news for the Denver Broncos. And I'm saying, no, Zach, no good news, bad news only. This team needs to start over. All right, hold on. I understand the tone of today's show can grind on some people because it is just a lot of, you know, your version of the truth, my version of the truth. You and I disagree on some things. We agree on many others. But it's just not good right now. So the tone is going to be what it is because we're telling our version of the truth, or just the truth. But I think I have great news because James and James Merrillat from 104.3thefan.com sitting in for Stoke today. Stoke will be back tomorrow. I think that, James, what was the number one goal of this season coming into it?
Finding out if Drew Lock is the quarterback of the future.
That's right. And it's unequivocal. Whether they made it to the playoffs or not, whether they finished 500 or not, those could have been goals, and I'm sure were for some people, but those came second to, is Drew Lock, if we're willing to continue to go down this road with him into 2021, that means you would have probably seen enough during 2020 that would, you know, lead you to believe that and go down that road. Yeah. Well, we are still going to have that opportunity because Drew Lock, this is not a season-ending injury. Drew Lock is going to be back in the mix, likely against either the Patriots or the Dolphins. So before the midway point of this season, we are likely going to see Drew Lock again and hopefully have him for the entire back half of the schedule. And amidst the guys hurt, all right? Now, I do not want to downplay the loss of Courtland Sutton. Courtland Sutton, if you are drafting offensive players, maybe you take him number one. So I don't want to brush that aside like it's not a big deal. But you look at a lot of the players that are hurt and specifically hurt for the season, Von Miller, Jarrell Casey, you know, A.J. Boye's been on IR. Hopefully we get him back. Draymond Jones is down. Mark Barron, Justin Sternad. A lot of these guys, most of them that are injured, are on the defensive side. Okay? But that being said, Philip Lindsay is coming back, maybe against the Jets on Thursday night, but if not that, definitely against the Patriots after another week and a half of rest. You look at your first-round pick, Jerry Jeudy, is still going to be out there. Your first-round pick from last year, Noah Fant, is still going to be out there. Former first-round pick and running back you're paying $16 million, he's still healthy. K.J. Hamler, who you thought so highly of in the second round, you ignored other positions and drafted him, he's still going to be out there. Your offensive line, 80% of it is going to be who the day one starters were, and the only guy that's getting replaced is Elijah Wilkinson, and he was the weakest link of those five guys. So the opportunity to accomplish the biggest goal, whether it works out for Drew or not, checking that box is still very much in play for the Broncos.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. There's no excuses once he's back for them to not put him through the tests, right? To like figure out the answer and get to the point by the end of the year to be able to say, yep, he's the guy or not the guy. And in a weird sort of way, Zach, the fact that they're so banged up on defense might force them to give him even more tests where it's not, hey, let's just have Drew go out there, not turn the ball over. You know, as long as every drive ends in a kick, we're okay. Let's try and win 17-13. It wouldn't be all bad if all of a sudden it was, hey, our offense has to go win some games. Can Drew Lock go win football games? Can he put 27 points on the board, against pick your opponent, right? Like, I think that's actually a better test than can he go out there and quote-unquote manage the game. And so in a weird sort of way, they may stumble upon something here because of all the injuries. Now, it all depends on Drew Lock has to be back, and then all those guys you just mentioned, at least most of them, have to still be there by the time he does get back. So, but no, I'm with you. I think the number one goal for the year can still be accomplished. And I think in a weird, twisted sort of way, it may set up even better for them to get that answer. I would rather be the Broncos be 6-10 and know definitively with Drew Lock than finish 9-7, get the 7 seed, and we're still debating because, you know, half the games were won by Blake Bortles, right? Like, to me, that doesn't answer anything. You're going into 2021, perhaps even more confused than you went into this year, because there would be a contingent that would say, well, Blake Bortles is the guy, right? Like, we would have that conversation would happen.
I want to scoff, but I actually saw people supporting Brandon Allen a year ago to remain the starter. And if Blake Bortles has actually played 100 games in this league and at one point was 35 touchdown guy, there would be a contingent if Blake played well that would want to see more Blake Bortles. So I agree.
And the head coach, and I'm not saying this to have another knock on Vic Fangio, the head coach might be one of them, right? Like if I was Vic Fangio and Blake Bortles won 5 games this year and Drew Lock won 4, I'd be tempted when, you know, I know I'm on a short leash, so to speak, in terms of heading into year 3. If I make it to year 3, yeah, I'd probably go with the veteran too. So I think just eliminating those kind of situations, those kind of doubts, those kind of questions. And look, the Broncos could finish 6-10, and the answer on Drew Lock could still be a resounding, yep, he's the guy, because he played well.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah,
and they lost some games, you know, 28-24 because the defense was just decimated. But, man, he looked really good. And then he had that game where they, went into L.A. and he led 2 touchdown drives against the Chargers in the fourth quarter. And they pulled a victory out of the jaws of defeat. And that was a big test. Like, you could have a season that looks bad standings-wise and still accomplish your number one goal. that is completely within the realm of possibilities. Now, right now, and probably next week, it is hard to find a lot of things that, boy, this is a reason to be excited, and this is something the Broncos can accomplish. But once Drew Lock's ready to go, yeah, I think there's all of a sudden a reason to have kind of some renewed enthusiasm.
Yes.
Even if they're 0-5 by the time
yes.
he comes back.
Yes, like, I don't care. I would do these, radio hits in like Sioux Falls or wherever, and they would ask me about the Broncos. I said the same thing multiple times throughout this offseason. I said, I don't know if the Broncos are going to be any good or not. I really don't know. They could be 6-10. Maybe they're 10-6. But what I do know is they're going to be interesting. And they're not right now.
No.
Unfortunately. But Drew Lock coming back into the fold, that interest factor for me is sky high. Because this is, along with maybe the head coach conversation and the John Elway conversation, the most important for the organization right now. And it comes back in play, and it could be sooner than later. And I hope that it is. And at that point, I am hitting the reset on my mindset that I am not getting bogged down with wins and losses. But if we see good stuff from Drew Lock and the Broncos, are, like you said, 5-11, 6-10, I could care less if we see enough from Drew Lock that we're willing to continue to go down the road. And I know you said, like, hey, I'd rather, the Broncos to be 6-10 or 5-11, and it's conclusive that Drew Lock is the guy rather than, 9-7 with Blake Bortles. James, probably it's not going to be conclusive. Like, there's, 2 years of Josh Allen in Buffalo. Coming into this year, people were still uncertain. Sam Darnold gets taken third in the draft. People in New York are still uncertain. Until Lamar Jackson did what he did a year ago, people were still uncertain. So the likelihood that it's this resounding, oh my gosh, slam dunk, he's the guy, there's probably going to be some good and some bad. My judgment will be, is there enough flashes? Is there enough moments that make us feel the way that we felt last year against the Houston Texans? And that's why I carefully chose those words of the goal of the season is to continue to go down the road with Drew, not anoint him the franchise quarterback, because more likely than not, he's in his first year as a starter. There's going to be some good, some bad. Hopefully the good outweighs the bad.
Yeah, there is going to be some good, and there's going to be some bad. I totally agree with you. I do think, though, you can get a definitive answer, even if there is, quite frankly, a whole lot of bad. Because if there are flashes, if there are those moments, again, I use the hypothetical, you throw two touchdowns in the final 3 minutes against the Chargers on the road to get a win. Okay, that would be a big-time flash. That's something you would never see from Trevor Siemian, Case Keenum, Brandon Allen, Brett Rippon, the cast of most of the characters that have come in here. We didn't even see it from Joe Flacco, a guy who's pretty accomplished in this league. If we can see those kind of moments, I would be willing to say, yeah, that's the guy. Now it becomes his job and the coach's job to, figure out, hey, how do we get rid of the bad moments and have more and more of those good moments? But if you show the ability to do it two or three times, well, then we know you got it in you, right? It's not a fluke. We know there's not this ceiling that, hey, you're going to be a manage the game kind of guy. And as long as you got the lead and you got a ton of talent around you and you got a great running game, you'll be fine. Like, if I see the flashes from him, I'm willing to go down that path. And case in point, look, the first half against Tennessee, they scored 7 points. But I saw flashes during that where I'm like, man, that touchdown throw where he's rolling to his right, throws the ball across his body,
yeah,
and hits Noah Fant in the end zone with like four defenders around
him. Yeah.
We saw a guy last night that can make that throw. There aren't a ton of other guys who can do it, and I'm not putting him in that class by no means. But if we get to the end of the year and we've had a dozen of those kind of things, okay, well, who are you going to go get that's going to be better than that, that's going to have a higher ceiling than that? And even if he does have a couple of games where he throws three picks and, man, sometimes you're just scratching his head. Well, I was scratching my head a lot with John Elway early in his career. He lined up behind the guard, for crying out loud.
Sure,
like,
sure,
these,
sure.
These things happen. But you also saw, I think it was like week 14 of his rookie year, they're down 19-0 in the fourth quarter of the Baltimore Colts, and he throws three touchdown passes, and Mile High Stadium is going nuts. And I'm a 10-year-old kid, and I'm smart enough to go, well, Steve DeBerg never did that, So John Elway's different than Steve DeBerg. You can see it, even though there are some troublesome moments during that year and during those early years. You can still see that, hey, those flashes, that makes that guy potentially special. And if you know he's potentially special by the end of the year, he's your guy.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I see on the RamosLaw.com text line, Trevor Siemian dominated Dak Prescott. Huge flash. And that was a reference to week two back in 2017, I believe it was. Look, the reason that I am still allowing myself to be excited about the season, outside that it's so young, is that the number one goal can still be checked off. That objective still can be reached, and there's enough games where we won't be just relying on one flash. There hopefully will be enough. Hopefully we have, you know, I don't know, eight, nine games of Drew Lock, and pair those with the five games that we saw a year ago. Hopefully we're feeling good about it. And someone says, look, what if he comes back and gets hurt again? At that point, I think it's an entirely different conversation. I think
you got your answer.
There would be you're moving on to plan B, whatever that is, and probably allowing him to maybe compete for the position or not. Like that's also in play. Like, or not, if he gets hurt again, you know, I don't want to think like that right now. He's not back from this injury. Look, it's part of the evaluation process, because at that point it would be, you know, three injuries in 2 years, and, you know, we're recalibrating this whole conversation.
Yeah, and that may not be fair, but that's just the reality of it, right? Like, it's not his fault that he got hurt, but if part of that position is staying healthy. And you not everybody's going to be Brett Favre and Eli Manning and, you know, have these long stretches where they don't miss a game. But, man, you got to be able to answer the bell 14, 15 times a season. Otherwise, you're just not a reliable option. But you remember the game. It was Case Keenum's first year here. They're playing the Chiefs here. They have a chance to win that game. He's got Demaryius Thomas wide open down the right sideline for a touchdown going into the northeast corner.
Yeah.
They win the game if he makes that throw.
Yeah, I was there.
Drew Lock, if he's playing in that type of moment and he makes that throw, and I know the crowd won't go crazy this year because there won't be anybody there, but that's the kind of play you're looking for, right? That's the difference. Case Keenum doesn't make that throw. Case Keenum doesn't come up in the clutch and make the big play. If we see Drew Lock do those kind of things, look, Brett Favre had a ton of moments in his first couple years in Green Bay where, you know, Mike Holmgren and all the great assistants they had there with Gruden and Mariucci, they all wanted to pull their hair out. But they also saw him roll to his left and throw the ball away across the fields and hit Sterling Sharp for a game winner against the Lions. We were like, dude, there's like three guys who played the last 50 years who can make that throw. So we'll put up with the frustrations because this guy has it. Those are the kind of things we need to see. Does he separate himself from the Case Keenums of the world?
Yeah.
And put himself, not that he's going to be Brett Favre and Patrick Mahomes and all that stuff, I get it, but put it in that category where, like, this guy can actually win you games, as opposed to having a quarterback that you're just hoping doesn't lose you games.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. And by the way, like, first of all, like, your eyes tell you, or they should tell you, that Drew Lock's really talented. So yeah, to put him side by side with Case Keenum and Trevor Siemian, like the one previous texter making the Trevor Siemian flash comparison against Dallas, do your eyes tell you that these two are the same? They shouldn't, because Drew Lock's arm talent is a real thing. I mean, it is a serious thing. This was a SEC player that was leading the nation in touchdown passes his junior year. The dude can play. And had he left after his junior year, you know, who knows where he's drafted? Probably not in the second round. So his starting point, his base, is already several floors higher than any of the guys that we're talking about leading up to him, which is why I think that we should be taking him seriously still.
Yeah, for sure. And you're 100% right about the eye test. Like, anybody who's watched those quarterbacks play more than a quarter of football should be able to tell the difference. And here's the thing. If they decide to move on from him, I'm convinced Drew Lock will have a moment or two and have a good stretch somewhere else in this league. None of those other guys have left here and done anything.
Right.
They weren't the answer. They're backups. And you know what? They're very reliable backups. You always know they're going to know the game plan, and they'll come in there and they won't embarrass you. They're Gary Kubiak. That's what they are. And there's a place in this league for Gary Kubiak type guys. But they're the number two guy for a reason. That's the role they should be filling. And yeah, you can, man, when we're down there at training camp and you're watching them just do drills and throw, you know, out routes and stuff like that, it just jumps out at you of which guys can make those throws and which guys it's, you know, a struggle. And he's in a different category than most of the guys that have been here, other than probably Flacco. Flacco still had a cannon, but he couldn't move. But yeah, it's night and day when you compare him to those other guys.
Well, I'm still hopeful. We're going into week four. Get a win on Thursday night and see if Drew Lock can play against the Patriots. And that will change the entire complexion of how we're viewing this thing. Because obviously what we saw this past week isn't good enough to beat anyone in the NFL, not even the Jets, by the way.
Nope.
So we'll see. We'll see Thursday night. It's really going to be a low key gut check for this football team. And I know it's only week four, but if they come out with the same spirit that they had against Tampa, and they get beat by the Jets, man, I think all conversations are in play in terms of, you know, the head coach. And, you know, we can talk about more about John Elway if you want to then. But I want to see him go out and get a win. And there's still some good football players that are going to be out there. Like if you put the Jets and the Broncos all into a big pot and they were all free agents and you were like fantasy football drafting, you know, you'd be picking more Broncos players early on than you would some of these Jets players. So you're
even based on even with all the injuries, even with you're all, right.
No, that's exactly what I'm talking about, because the Jets are absolutely ravaged with injuries too. Their skill position players are literally the worst in the league. So you're going to have more talent even with Brett Rypien starting at quarterback. You're going to have more talent. So look, their coach is getting fired after the game, literally, if they don't win. It's a disaster there in New York. So if you can't beat the Jets, I think it'll speak to the spirit of the team. Vegas has the Broncos as a road favorite in that one by a full field goal. If they're playing at a neutral site, that means almost you're a touchdown favorite. They can't lose that game on Thursday night for a bunch of different reasons.
Yeah. No, you're right. It does change the narrative if they're able to get the win, and you have some hope then, especially with Drew Lock potentially coming back even the next game. And if you lose it, it's not just a red flag. It's a red flag that's on fire being thrown into a dumpster while sirens are sounding, right? Yeah, like it is, not to overstate it, but all the things you said about the Jets are 100% right. Like they got nothing going for them. If you can't go beat that team, then you have major, major problems. And it's time to start looking at, hey, we need to blow this thing up and go in a completely different direction on a lot of fronts.
Well, I'm hoping that won't be the case on Friday morning. I really appreciate you, James, coming by here and, you know, filling Stokely's chair for a day. Stoke will be back tomorrow, but a lot of good conversation. Love going back and forth with you, even though if we're disagreeing half the time, it's always respectful, and I appreciate you.
Yeah, man, it's always fun, and I will work on a better analogy than Fast and Furious. I got too many texts about how bad that one was.
It's like they made $1 billion. How are you going to, you know, come at them? Good stuff, man. We'll talk to you real soon.
All right, sounds great.
All right, there goes James Merrillat. Really appreciate him coming by today, and Stoke will be back tomorrow. Appreciate anyone who heard the first hour of the show when I was flying solo. Appreciate you giving me that time. A shout out to Stephen Priest behind the glass. Tomorrow we're going to do Stock Watch, potentially talk to someone on the Jets side of things. So looking forward to tomorrow's show in a major way. Appreciate everyone. Stay safe. All right. Appreciate you guys on the RamosLaw.com text line, as always. So for now, we step aside and toss it to our guys, The Drive, coming up next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 104.3thefan.com.